You're listening to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. And welcome to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. This is Chris Young, your host, and this episode we have James White.
Hey guys.
Rob McCormack.
Heidi ho.
Mark Williams.
Hello.
And Ben Thomas.
Hello.
Hello. Right, so this episode we're going to be covering the first Northwest Regional Steamroller. We're going to go through the events that are coming up, and then the topic for today is going to be playing to the meta. So we're going to go through a bit of discussion on that as well. So just to go straight into the news. So the news has been pretty brief. We've had the Legion CID as updated again, so we won't go into it because no matter what we say here, chances are by the time you're listening to this, it's already changed. But we will obviously give it a bit of a cover once they've finalized it and it's come out. There's also been a bit of shock in the War Machine world. We have lost our resident Drama Llama. So if there's anyone out there who would like to take up the mantle and raise our future change.org requests, you let us know. We will tout you there because, you know, there is a big gaping hole for overreacting in the current meta. There we go. I won't say any more. Right, so just to give us some introduction on upcoming events now, just to be aware, if you want to know any of the details on these events, all of our regional organizers' details are on the website, which is wmhukiss.co.uk. So just to give you some of the ones that are coming up in the next month, we've got the Firestorm Games qualifiers. So all three event details are now up. They've got three events with four qualifiers from each, and then the next four come from the wild card based on the results of the three. So obviously, if you want to get in all three and you don't qualify, more chance of you getting in that wild card. We have Colchester with 4KT Gaming on the 3rd of February. War Games in Southport on the 3rd of February. The Outpost on the 24th of February, and in Northampton on the 12th of February. So get in touch if you want to get involved, you want to try and qualify, you want to be like some of our guests here today, and going up through the ranks, and then hopefully we'll see you on the national stage by the end of the year. So that is the all the fun nitty-gritty details out the way, so we'll get into the actual interesting people. So we had at War Game Store over the weekend, we had our first Northwest Steamroller. I was also there, but unfortunately you still have to put up with me even though I didn't qualify. But we did have, against all predictions in the meta, we had not only Ben with his Retribution, but we also had Mark with his Legion, which I believe both of those factions are useless, aren't they, boys?
That's what I've been told.
Definitely the worst two, yeah. The worst two.
Yeah, definitely the worst two. So obviously everyone else at the Steamroller must have been a massive scrub, I think. That's the only explanation, and that you were just playing against, you know, brand new people that have never played before.
I'll excuse the player, the guy, I can't remember what he was called, playing Convergence for his first four ever games. We'll let him off, I reckon.
I did quite well, considering that they were my first four ever games. 3-1 wasn't too bad. I did come up against this, he was just awful in the first round. He was cheating, and I'm pretty sure his dice were weighted and everything. It was terrible. What were your thoughts on him, Mark?
I think he was a really nice guy. I don't think his dice were loaded, and I know he definitely got away with it if they were.
He did indeed. So what I'll do then,
my favorite of your games, Chris, was the just seeing you just take Haley 3 to pieces. That was a real joy to watch.
Indeed. I must admit, that was one of those games where you have a list and you write a list and you go, in theory, this is what this list should do. So when you actually come to play it, and bearing in mind that was the fourth game I'd played with Convergence in Mark 3, and I was against Haley, and I was like, okay, this is what I should do. And then I did it, and it went, oh, it actually worked for once. So yeah, although Haley did nearly, you know, when you do everything, and then the Haley just comes back. That's the scary part, is when you blow all of your feet, you kill the echoes, and then they just come back anyway, and it just takes the wind out of your sails just a little bit, but it did feel good for the time. I do know Rich, unfortunately, can't be on the podcast today, who was TOing. He did come across to the table to watch the feet turn just because he has a personal thing against Elite 3. So, yeah, so that was good. So what I'll do, save me talking all the way through, is I'll hand you over to Ben and Mark, who'll just give a bit of a summary of the day, a bit of a background on the faction and why they chose it, and then we'll get on to the topic. So, Ben, would you like to go first?
Yeah, certainly. I'll start with the list that I took to the event. So I took Kaylissa in the Legions of Dawn, so the Dawn Guard theme list. So she had Helios, double max Sentinels and double min Destas, which are an unpopular choice, but I find they're working nicely in the list. There's some support around, but there's no point going into that. And I paired that with Vyros 2 with Imperator 6 Griffins, 2 Aspis, and basically 9 additional focus from the Arcanists and the Arcanist units. I find that the list is not perfect, and this does touch onto the meta discussion that we'll be having later on, in that I knew locally there wasn't going to be a lot of cricks coming to the event. And so having a pretty nasty cricks hole in my pair wasn't likely to be a disaster going forward, because I wasn't likely to see it. I know there was just Adam Jones coming with his. I played the hope to dodge card and it came off. So Mark, if you want to go into your lists.
Yeah, so as Legion of Everblight, I had Thagrosh 1 in the Children of the Dragon theme with the 3 character heavies, Min Swordsmen and Min Hex Hunters with 3 UAs, and then just Ice Witches support and Skrillex, obviously, and then Veil 2 in Oracles, because you've got to play an Oracles list with Legion, that is the downfall. And I had Double Throne, Double Scythian, Seraph and Naga, because you have to have a Seraph and a Naga in one of your lists. And Black Frost Shard, I think that's about it. Free stuff, Succubus and Hellions, that was my lists.
So going briefly run through my first 3 games before playing Mark in the last round. So I played against Signar round 1. It was a Nemo 3 Cray pairing. Personally, if I don't see Haley 3 in a Signar pairing, I feel pretty confident with Kaylissa into it. Got the first turn and pushed him out of the scenario zones pretty quickly, getting a 5-0 CP victory. I think bottom of 3, because he forced her to... Well, I don't think he was forced to killbox Nemo, but unfortunately he did. I think it just sped up the process as much as anything. Round 2, I played Andy from Power Fist. I'm not going to attempt to butcher his surname. He was another of the many Legion players at the event. He was using Ryus and cannot remember whose second list was, unfortunately. It was a very, very tough game. Ryus gets me very, very cagey. I'd played a clubmate with her into Vyros 2 a week or so before. And just her threat. And Andy had Double Thrones and Proteus for so much 4-inch melee threat on the board. There's nowhere that's safe. So it's always a very cagey game. I could have won by scenario one turn, but misplayed a couple of my support pieces. And Vyros 2 on 4 camp had to tank Ryus to the face, which thankfully went my way. So it was an easy assassination next turn.
Just before we jump on to the next one, we have got the correct pronunciation of his surname provided by Rob here, which is Sexy Lexi.
Yes, Sexy Lexi. That's right.
Yeah, that sounds about right. With some wonderful Thrones of Everblight. And then round 3 was into James, who is on the podcast. I think we briefly discussed before we started recording. He had played Madrak twice in the morning, had 2 very long games, didn't want to play it again. Cold Grimmer was the wrong choice into Vyros 2, especially on Spread the Net, and couldn't really get close enough to contest the zone. So I think that was 8-3 on scenario, which takes me up to the final. So I'll pass over to Mark.
Yeah, so my first round was into Chris with his cop, but which I didn't know was your first game ever with them, to be fair, Chris.
I did have a brief
fair enough. So you still knew more about Cock than I did, though, to be fair, because, I mean, as everyone knows, you play Cock, so no one knows what anything you've got is or does or what it's called or anything. So I didn't have a clue. didn't have a clue what I was facing, didn't know which what either of your casters did, so I just dropped bags one and hoped that I'd take it to the face and survive. And I did, just luckily, because you rolled a lot of ones, to be fair, and then I rolled a lot of sixes, and that was the end of that game, really, wasn't it?
There was a point where I kind of got over indulgent on Orion's feat turn, being it was the first time I popped it, and I was like, I'm going to destroy the world, and with the unyielding and all the extra stuff, things just didn't die, did they?
Still a lot of ones, though, to be fair.
There was nearly a chance Orion was going to settle it for himself at the end, but I think it was that point I was in dice funk. And instead of just boosting a seven as I should, I just rolled them and it just didn't happen. So, but it was very close. It was a very close game. It was very good fun as well. So great introduction to Orion as well.
Yeah, it was. It was good. It was very good. So after that, I had Steve Passy with Trolls, which was obviously Madrat 1. Is it a different list? He had Creel Warriors and Fenblades and just one heavy, the Bomber. And I had to drop Thags 1 again because Veil just can't hit them that hard, and then it's the constant worry because he was in Band of Heroes, so everything removes from play, so Thagwash doesn't get a feat. So I just kind of tried to push him over to one side for scenario and just managed to get it. 7-2, I think I won on scenario. Had Azrael had been removed from play, Typhon was on about four boxes, Zoriel wasn't doing much better. Any of them that died weren't coming back. Thagwash had took a couple of hits from a bomber as well. It was all going horribly for me, but just managed to, just by pushing him over to the left-hand side of the board until he couldn't contest and got lucky, to be fair. And then I played Dan Price from Power Fists in game three. Dropped Veil 2 into... We did have quite a big talk about the matchup, to be fair, because we both knew everything that each other's listed because it was Legion on Legion. And I dropped Veil 2 into Saren, and I think just having the extra threat with Boundless Charge on the heavies and the thrones and that sort of thing gave me the edge, really, in that game. Won that one scenario as well. But that was a good game. That was a lot of fun. I forgot to put Grievous Wounds on Scythian when it killed Zoriel. It had respawn on him, so he just came back and contested two elements of a scenario. And I left Veil quite out in the air and got lucky, really. But yeah, in the end, I was quite happy. It was three good games leading into the final.
You don't have much confidence in yourself there, do you, Mark? I'm pretty sure there was more to it than just luck.
No, I think in all of them, I got a bit lucky, to be fair. I mean, you've got to have a bit of luck in your games, haven't you? I mean, against Steam, my dice were pretty poor at times, but I think that's just Madrek 1. You may as well minus 2 off every dice roll. But yeah, against Dan, I think he had an assassination on and it was a bit iffy, and I thought it was pretty certain he could go for it, and he decided not to. I think he could have won, really, but I didn't let him know at the time, to be fair. He'll only know if he listens to this.
So it's, the interesting thing with the event in general is that going into round 3, there were 5 players on 2-0. So it's myself with Rhett, James with Trolls, and then 3 Legion players. So it was obviously it was Mark and Dan who he played, and then Mark Ellis, clubmate of mine and Chris's, which sort of flies in the face of the doom and gloom, some of the doom and gloom that you've heard on the internet lately. So going into the final round, there were three undefeated players, because Mark had won as the pair down, Mark Ellis, but me and Mark Williams were paired up with Mark playing Dan as the pair down matchup. To sort of skip ahead a little bit, Mark ended up losing that to Dan, so it worked out that the game between me and Mark was a sort of a true final in the end. It was a difficult one for me in terms of picking a list, as Vyros 2 is my go-to into Legion, indeed into most hordes, really. But something about Mark's pairing, with him having Veil 2, it makes me want to drop Kaelissa because she can just put Spell Ward on herself and protect from the assassination and hope I can grind out the game. and the Thagrush having list having so many high price single models with Helios to potentially drag them out or move them around and kill them. Sentinels can still take them out reasonably well. When I was picking lists, I didn't realize how high their armor was, but actually led to me dropping Kaelissa, which in theory she only has half a feat into Legion, but I thought it was the right drop anyway.
Yeah, I was always dropping Thagrush 1, to be honest with you. I didn't even know that I couldn't target Kaelissa with spells. Like, you know, I don't know anything about Rhett. There's only you around that plays them, really. I just thought Thagrush should take Byros, and I expected to see Byros. I just thought, you know, even with synergy up, I'd be able to just tank a heavy, tank one of the lights and kill it, and then just keep doing that. I thought I'd be fine, but I didn't get to do that, so it didn't really matter. But Kaelissa, to be fair, I've probably played more than I've played anyone else, but I still didn't know that you couldn't target with spells. I just knew what the feat was.
Yeah, in terms of how the game went, if Mark, if you don't mind me briefly summarising it from my point of view, it was, I can't remember who won first turn. I'm pretty sure I did. No, I didn't.
I went first.
You went first.
I went first and gave you the wall. Probably shouldn't have given you the wall.
Possibly not. I think if I'd have gone first, you wouldn't have got an assassination attempt too early on. So my not having the wall might not have been as much of an issue. But I had a wall and a trench to potentially keep Kaelissa in. Mark pushed up. I pushed up sort of the edge of threats, giving him the only things that he could really target were just going to set off vengeance on the Sentinels. So I didn't have to feat bottom of one, which is something I loathe to do with Kaelissa. Sort of set Mark into a situation where he had to push into my threats, really. And I managed to get a lot of good charges off and yeah, just about had enough to kill two heavies in that turn. So I took out Typhon and Zuriel. Did a bit to Azrael, but not too much. Clear out quite a bit of his infantry. The Destas were fantastic in the game at just dealing with the swordsmen, dealing with a few of the Hex Hunters. And the game tipped in my direction, so that even when Typhon came back, Mark wasn't really able to do quite enough on his subsequent turns in terms of killing Sentinels, that the game swung in my favour to get an assassination on Thagrush on the...
It was subsequent turn after that.
It did. It turned quickly because the trick, I suppose, with the Kaelissa list is that the Tactician Dawnguard from the Sire is such a powerful ability with the Destas, because the Sentinels' vengeance, the Destas then charge through the Sentinels to clear out another way, another line, and then the Sentinels can charge through another 10 inches so that they can get so deep through so many lines of infantry that keeping your caster safe, especially with Kaelissa was shooting off the Fury from Thagrush. Everything was able to work in the list as I sort of hoped it would. And was able to take out sort of my first tournament win with Rhett, which was a really nice feeling.
Yeah, I have to agree. The way the tactician works, especially on the assassination, was it's almost like I lined them up perfectly for you. To be honest, it was just like, well, I'll take them, now I'll take them, now I'll take Thagrush. Thank you very much. But I've been looking at what I did, like looking back on it myself, and I think that's the game where I learned something yesterday. Thagrush only started playing at the end of December, so I was quite happy to have the wins that I've had. I've only had three wins before going to the event with him, to be fair. So I learned a lot playing you, which is good for me. It was just a shame I just got rolled over in the final, really. Well, you know, that's how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was nice that game ended up being the two qualifiers. Your strength of schedule was incredibly strong. Mine was very weak, to the point where had you beaten me, I wouldn't have taken second in the event. So obviously,
I was talking to Dan Price after we finished about strength of schedule, because he said it was between him and me, and I looked and I was like, well, I've played someone on table one, someone on table two, and someone on table three, and I was like, I've got to have a good strength of schedule here. And I felt bad, actually, because Glenn that Chris was playing with Haley 3, he's my club mate, and I'm there rooting for Chris because I wanted the strength of schedule. I was like, let's qualify. felt really bad, but then it was Hayley 3, so it kind of balances out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I must admit, I can feel the eyes in the room, because it being that it's against Hayley 3, there's never a quick win against Hayley 3, but I could feel both you and Dan just sort of staring over at the table, wondering which way it was meant to go for you, so I imagined you.
And it's nice that it's two Northwest players. Obviously, the Steamrollers have to be open to sort of wider areas, but the fact that it's two local Northwest region players rather than one of the Power Fist lot that decided to come up and invade is nice for sort of the system to show, put the system in a nice place going forward in the region.
Indeed. So both of you have now qualified to the regional final. So once the other seven have gone through, there's going to be a 16-man regional final, which you guys are already in. And the top four from there will be in the national. So you might be facing each other again in a few months' time. And then it could be the two of you that go up to join Ryan Evans at the national, represent the Northwest. So
I'm going to bring some absolute nonsense lists to any other Northwest qualifiers for the rest of the year. It takes a lot of the pressure off, sort of knowing that's already secured and can get ready for it later in the year.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go like Abbey 2 Shredder spam and maybe play Veil 1, because nobody plays Veil 1, and just see what happens in the next event.
You got to keep yourself sharp though now, because you've got the regionals to think.
Yeah, just the next stage. Just the next event. There's six more qualifiers in the Northwest after that.
Yes, indeed. So, and are we going to see James and Rob joining in?
Maybe.
It will depend for me. I mean, the thing with the Northwest is you guys are the closest to the Midlands. And like, while I'd love to go up to see the Merseyside Mammoths, it's about another hour drive. So it's quite a way for me.
I'd totally come up. It's just you buggers always put it on a Saturday and I can never get Saturdays off.
Ah, see, this is the cheeky way we get around it. You see, we knew Rob can't do Saturdays and that's why we put them on.
Foiled again, curses.
And then the next one's booked for the same day as the event in York. So I think they've dodged a few travellers that are going there instead.
Indeed, that's the ball game.
I know it was my plan to qualify at that one when I knew you weren't going to be there.
You can go free and easy now. So, James, you've got something you wanted to say?
Yeah, so when we were... Obviously, you mentioned our match when we were playing, Ben, and about how... you prepped for the meta and you knew what to expect, what you thought was going to be there. And I find that really interesting because obviously I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't even know Chris had changed factions, for instance. So I was probably expecting Grimkin from him.
No one had.
Yeah. So what I would say is, had I known the meta, I would have probably bought Doomy 2. And I think I'd have had a very good shot against the five people that were left when I, you know, when I got to the round three. And I think it would be very, very interesting as a topic to talk about meta and how I think two Northwest players probably qualified because they had knowledge of the meta and they knew what to expect. And it's hard from an outsider to come into a local tournament not knowing the meta and to build, you know, and to not know specifically what to build for it and what to expect.
Absolutely. It's the difference between a local event and a national event. A national event, you've got to prepare for everything because it's impossible to know everything that's coming. Whereas for a local event, I know we've got a few Crix players locally, and not to do any of them down because they're getting there very quickly, but they are relatively new players. Adam, who was coming over from North Wales, possibly a little bit more out of practice than he'd like to be. So that was a big thing for me. It's very, very difficult to build a rep pair, two lists that can cover everything reasonably well. You've got to find a hole somewhere. The best one is probably, for me, Virus 2 Assyria. But I don't like the Assyria list that you've got to play. I'm much more comfortable with Kaelissa. It leaves you a bit weak to Crix, but I was in the fortunate position of a bit of local knowledge going a long way.
I mean, just mentioning the meta there, just so for those out there that may or may not know what meta is, what that's short for is the meta game. So what that means is when you're playing a War Machine, you obviously can go on the website, you can see all the factions, you can see there's 160 casters now or something like that across all the different factions. when you're playing and you're making your list pair and you're considering what you're going to play against, the meta is what you're actually going to play into. So as Ben mentioned, if you're playing into a national event, there's a lot more chance that you're going to come up against people who are playing things that you would expect to read about if you're in a Facebook group and everyone says, oh, I play these two casters, and they say they do as well. You're probably good chance of meeting them at a national event with 128 people. But as James said, with the local meta, when there's only going to be 20 people there, you can have a look on the website for the tickets that have declared as their factions. You can, you know, you might actually know the people and know what they've been playing recently. You know, if one of them's got a real hankering to play Grail in Circle, you know, you wouldn't expect to go eat a Grail in Circle. What you can actually then do is make it so that you're aware of what you're actually going to play against, which, as Ben said, you know, he would normally have to consider Crix as an option, but when you focus actually to your meta and you play to the meta, it actually gives that. So what we're gonna do for the topic is just go through, because we've actually got different factions who play in different, as if you like, and also nationally, and I thought we could just go through and sort of talk about how each person progresses, how they approach the meta both nationally and locally, and any sort of share, because obviously if you're involved in the Steamroller series, you're going to be getting involved in different people's metas possibly. So James, you want to take that through first?
Yeah, can I start by blowing your mind, Chris? 160 casters, would it blow your mind to find out there are 198 current casters?
Wowzers. You know what, I'm not surprised, because I think 160 was probably about a year ago, so yes, 190, that's crazy.
Yeah, we're going to get the 200th caster very soon. I know, because I'm trying to play against them all, like, and I'm tracking them, and it's just, it's ridiculous how many casters have come out recently as well. Right, so, I come from the Midlands, and if you play in the Midlands meta, I think you have, there's a couple of things you have to realise about what you're, when you're building a list pair. For instance, you're probably not going to run into Signar very much. You're not going to run into Haley 2, you're not going to run into Haley 3. And so it changes how you build your pairing. I think one of the things we also do when we're looking at a local meta is you look at the strong players and you say, if I want to win a tournament, I have to get through X. X in the Midlands is Rob. And so you have to have a pair that can beat Kador. And that's probably not the same for most places. But it's very, very interesting that you want to pick up on who is good in your location, not just who plays what faction. If you've got two players in your area that play Scorn, but they're very new to the game, they've been playing it less than 6 months, you don't really have to worry about Scorn, because you can probably beat them with lists not tailored to beat that specific faction. So it's all about knowing not just what factions are played, but who is a strong player with those factions. The other thing I'd like to say is that I feel it's you have to get game and be ready for playing on a national stage, because you never know, you know, you have to be able to transfer that when we get to big events. So I think, as you said, it's very, very important to you know, be able to transfer that to a big event and say, it doesn't matter what it is locally, it's about what it is nationally as well when you want to move, because you want to play in both local and national events.
Okay, Rob, how do you tend to approach your meta?
Well, as James sort of mentioned before, I'm kind of one of the big fish in the meta, which feels really, really arrogant to say that, but whatever. And the Midlands meta is like, I actually find it's kind of kind of wide. So, like James said, that he doesn't run into much Signar. We actually did at Power Fist Spy Club quite a bit, but it wasn't like Haley 2 and Haley 3. It was like Cray and Maddox and all these other ones, and Sturgis, yes, because two of our local players had an obsession with him for some reason, despite how awful he is. But certainly, from a personal point of view, I don't tend to look at the wider meta of what I'm building. I tend to focus on a single strong list, and then I look at what the weaknesses of that list are, which generally tend to come down to like what my faction's weak to. So I play Kador. Traditionally, the predator of Kador is Crix. So my main list is something I play into pretty much everything, and then my off list is just a Crix solution, which happens to be able to play into some other stuff as well. So, especially now that I've started going to more international tournaments, I hit up Irish Gauntlet last year. I'm heading over to Seattle for the Iron Gauntlet this year. I'm starting to try to make the meta react to me. So I'm playing an Old Witch 2 list with a bunch of jacks at the moment, and I'm just flinging it into everything I possibly can to see if I can actually play it. And so far, the answer has been yes. Yes, I can play into most things. So yeah, it's important to keep track of what the current hotness is in each of the factions. So like, if you're playing into Krix, there's probably going to be Coven. If you're playing into Legion, there's probably going to be Abbey 2 or Thagrosh, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it can be very easy to get too bogged down in what everyone else is playing, and you sort of start getting away from your own faction strengths and what's good in your own faction.
Okay, and just in regards to the Krix list, do you have a local Krix player or a group of Krix players?
We have two Krix players, one of whom is very recent back into the game, and one who's just got back into it recently. So for the last sort of 3 months, we've had a Krix player, but for about a year before that, we didn't. So it's been hard to get the practice we need. And we've just had another one come up from the Walsall lot, Chris Dacre, who has moved up. He's a pretty good Krix player. So I'm anticipating a lot more practice into them over the next few months.
No, fair enough. Mark, you're a bit of a go between there. You've got your two. So how is it you approach your...
To be honest, I just look for something that's going to crack a load of armor and then something that's going to cover what that list won't cover. Because generally in Legion, you just don't want to see too many boxes. And so I went with Thagrosh 1 this time, and Vale covered Krix and Signar for me, really, that I didn't want to see. And Legion, I suppose. I was always going to drop Vale into the mirror. And that's the way I've always played. In Mark 2, I did the same. What's going to break armor, and what's going to deal with what that doesn't like, which generally Vale 2 deals with whatever anything else doesn't like for you, unless the other thing doesn't like trolls or something. But I think my pairing at the moment is pretty weak, in all honesty, because we have a lot of trolls locally now, don't we? Really, like, Tom's very strong, and I've got to play Tom, and I think RB2 is the best drop, so I might move Thagrosh into an Oracle's list. So then you've got Thagrosh with the Thrones, and then the Thrones are arm 22. That's wonderful. And then you can just play RB2 with all the beasts and just Grievous Wounds everything, and you don't care about Madrag 1 anymore, and it's all wonderful. Thank you very much. So it sounds like the way to do it, really, with our meta. There is some Grimkin, but obviously, like, you've gone to Cock, Chris, so there's not that. But really, we don't have a Krix player at all locally, so I find it quite easy to just, I could just play one list if I wanted to half the time. I could go Abbey 2 and never have to change, apart from when I play Glenn, which with his Signar, and that is like with Legion at the moment, I can literally just make one list if I wanted to, but you can't take it to a tournament. So that's kind of the way that our meta is, to be fair.
So Mark, locally, I think. Just with you obviously saying that Rob said he's got like the Old Witch, he's taking the Old Witch, the Old Witch is quite a popular caster. He's just practicing it into everything, he's got that prep of being in. I would imagine, Rob, that you play at events that people expect to see Old Witch. Are they ever surprised when you have Old Witch?
I don't know. I've surprised a number of people with what I've dropped. Like, I've dropped my off list into things, but generally, like Blood and Ore is probably the most recent one. I had a three list pairing of Old Witch, Sorsha, and Strakhov, and I had a lot of people expecting Strakhov when I dropped Sorsha. So I suppose so. Yeah.
So with the way that you make your list, and the fact that you just, you know, heavy hitter one to cover it, do you find when you go to events and people, because everyone has this kind of list chickeny thing in their head, they're like, oh, I want to drop this into this and I want to drop that into this. Do you think that, like, I mean, you mentioned it with playing Ben, that you just had, no, I'm going to drop this, what I drop. Do you tend to find that in a way that you're kind of playing against the expected, but you just have it in your head something to do?
No, I don't think so, because, I mean, with Legion, generally, there's always the assassination on. Like, I could, Blood and Oil again, is a good example. That's the most recent one. I took Abbey 2 just to face Grimkin, and faced an awful lot of Grimkin. So that was really obvious. And when I played my third Grimkin player, he was like, I knew you were dropping Abbey 2. and it was really obvious. But if I wanted to, in a lot of games, I had the twins as a Crix drop. Didn't see any Crix, but the twins, you can play the twins into anything really, because you can just go for the assassination. That's a side of Legion I never seem to assassinate anymore. But you've always got that on with Veil 2, unless they've got Vanishing Ward or similar. You know, you've always got the assassination on. If I don't like the look of it. So there is always that. There's a lot of times where people will have dropped based on seeing Veil 2 or seeing the twins. They'll be like, I can't drop this because of that. And then you end up in a good matchup for it.
I will say, in terms of like predictability of drops, I am finding more and more lately that I am telegraphing my drops quite a lot. Like my Sorcerer One list is very obviously my Crix list. So if I play into Crix, they can probably predict that I'm going to drop Sorcerer. Equally, if I'm playing into Scorn, I'm probably not dropping Sorcerer, so the Witch is probably going down. And that's been interesting to go into, because I used to play my list a lot more open than I have been the last 6 months.
And Ben, what's your approach then? And a bit earlier, but sort of local.
Well, the thing with me is that I started playing Rhett at the beginning of last year, February last year, and had a horrible time at the Welsh. And then as I was sort of building into the faction, starting to learn what was needed locally, there was, I think we had a steamroller maybe about a month before the Nationals last year. And I realized that my pair, which at the time was Issyria and Kaelissa, I think, wasn't going to cut it, because you had Ryan playing Makeda double cats. You had Paul playing Wormwood. You had Richard playing that horrible Zakova one list that I still do not ever want to see. And I realized that for those specific local problems, I needed Vyros 2 as a solution. As a side note, it doesn't solve Zakova 1. I was completely wrong on that. But it does deal with those other two problems. And having then got the reps in at a local level, playing those, I then felt comfortable taking that caster to the national tournaments and starting to play him into everything, and then building a pair around that caster that's become comfortable. The situation's now sort of taken that interesting next step with local metas, in that, again, I agree with Rob, it sounds big-headed to say it, but I am now one of the players locally that people think about when building their list pair. So local players are now building their pairs to tackle Vyros 2. And that's where I think this game really shines, in that at some point, people locally teching against my caster that was brought into tech against them is going to force me to change up what I do when I get fed up of having everything TK'd around by Kruger 2, for example, and force that constant changing, which makes this game such a joy to play.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Like, Abbey 2 was doing great for me until the Reshef double derp turtles showed me that there is a weakness to it against armor, to be fair.
Okay. I'll just give my sort of overview, and then we'll sort of break it open more broader. So with me, obviously I did a bit of a meta bender, in that I'd been collecting Convergence in the background, and managed to actually get them all put together and based and everything, base marked, ready for the event, except for Orion, who for some reason wasn't able to obtain at all. So I was able to proxy him, which was nice of Rich to allow me to. Although, Ben, you said my proxy was very good.
It's the best proxy I've ever seen. There was no question. I don't know whether there was a picture of it online. I know Rich was taking a load. But there is no way you would look at a Convergence model with a big, massive circle around his head and assume he was ever anything other than Orion.
Indeed. It was just a post-it note that was then stuck on Axis's head. But, you know. I think actually if I put it on the Swiss Army Knife caster, it would have fit the part even better. But so basically I'd swap that over, because I know that a lot of the local players and stuff have been playing against Grimkin. They're not very, you know, it's that kind of thing. Grimkin have kind of pushed people back to that time when you just started the game, and that you got caught out and then caught out. And I know that a lot of our local players have been caught out by the Grimkin players, myself and a few of the others, and I've been sort of like, Grimkin are terrible, Gremlin swarms, they're awful. So I did think that for the event there would definitely be a lot of people having a think about what they could do against Grimkin at the time, and I thought it would just be quite funny to turn up with Convergence on the day, because I'm that kind of person. I did, though, one of the things I did consider is I did know that there was going to be some Signar. And as mentioned, that Orion list was designed basically for to counter any sort of Grimkin, because I think it's actually still got some good game into Grimkin. But also for the Haley 3 drop. And then it was kind of my general anti-brick list to go into that. And then the Lucant one was kind of my, I don't know what to do. I don't know whether the Orion is any good into it. So I will just drop Lucant and see if you have any RFP and just show lots of men to you and keep running men into you and see how the game goes from there. And it seemed to all work out okay. As we mentioned, managed to win three of the games. But I think that the main thing for me is that I do find myself thinking about the national meta over the local meta. And as mentioned, you know, you've got things like, we've got a good representation, but things like Crix, I still consider in a pair when I'm making them, because for some reason, and it kind of goes against my own advice, is that I try to play a list which if I needed to, I could take locally and then take nationally, because then I've got the practice with those lists, as opposed to sort of playing a list locally of which then I would have to change if I was to go national, because then I'd have to learn new caster or new list or new units and things like that. So I was just curious with, like, Ben obviously had one specific for that, but you've played those casters before, haven't you?
I have, yeah. Well, the two casters, the Virus 2 and the Kalissa, with very minor tweaks to lists, were the two lists that I were the only two lists I played at Blood and Oil a few months ago. So they do work. It's just the constant feeling of having to scrabble for a Crix drop and to a Grimkin drop to a certain extent as well. It's not something that feels comfortable. But I'm playing Rhett, but I've touched briefly on the storm that has gone down since the ATC results. Our 22% win rate, Rhett are unplayable. When they're not, Rhett are absolutely not unplayable. They're in a really good place. It's nice in a way to have seen that we're not getting a CID this year, because there is a real stable period for the faction where we can just learn what we've got, perfect what we've got, deal with the changes in the meta, and work from that place. I don't think there exists a rep pair that can cover everything. There's always going to be something that you're scrabbling for, at which point comfort in your lists becomes the most important thing, and the fact that you know your lists and the matchup when you face off against someone better than they do, which is how you win games.
Yeah, I think that actually comes back to the other point which I was going to make off that, which is actually a perfect example there, is that one of the things that I am looking to do and approach going forward, which I think is kind of the way Rob approaches it as well, is that he has his main list. He has a list which he has loads of experience with. He's played into lots of different things. He's ran into stuff that smashed it and gone, okay, that's something I can't get around through sort of tactics and things like that. And I imagine that most of you have had that kind of experience. When you come to a national event where you could come up against nearly 200 different casters, different lists, that having it where you can't think about all the odd of those, having that one list which you go, right, I'm not quite sure what they're going to drop. I've not seen more, or I've only seen lots a year ago. I'm just going to have this one list to drop. And then the other list, or the other two lists in cases, that is then the one where you go, right, okay, I know for a fact that this list is horrible into Crix, you know, infantry swarms or Grimkin or something like that you come across and you go, I literally can't get around it through experience and through board positioning and scenario. So I'm just going to have to make my other list, which will be that one, to play into it. Now, that does come into another part of the meta discussion, which we didn't quite cover, which is this event was DNC 0. Do you find change, and this is kind of an open question for you guys, do you find your lists change depending it is DNC?
Not in a two list event for me. In a three list event, DNC 1, I think will definitely make a difference. As I said, at Blood and Oil, I had Assyria as one of my three lists, never played her, and never really wanted to either. She was there to scare off certain Crix stuff, scare off certain Signar stuff, but never wanted to play. In a two list four round, I think you're going to get an opportunity within those first three rounds to drop both your lists, so I wouldn't consider it in that. In a three list or in a two list, three round event, it is something I think you have to think about more.
And Rob,
I was just going to say that because I don't really change my lists based on the DNC of an event. I just sort of take them. And I rely on... because I've played my lists a lot. Like, I've been playing Sorcerer 1 and Old Witch 2 since Old Witch 2 came out, back when the themes dropped. So I rely on the play experience I have with my lists to know what I can drop my lists into. So I might say in a three or four round tournament, I might say, well, I can drop Old Witch here, and that is the better drop, but I can also play Sorcerer, and I need to make sure I'm not locked. So having that experience with your lists is kind of key if you're looking to win tournaments with DNC in them.
Okay, Mark or Jay?
I'd say it doesn't make any difference. I asked Rich yesterday at the start of round three what the DNC was. I hadn't really thought about it yet. I think with me, I just try and cover everything over two lists. And I think, as I say, like if I had to drop Bale, I could always go the assassination, even if it's a bad drop. But yeah, DNC one's never been an issue for me. DNC zero's never made me change anything at all. I think Legion in Mark III has mostly just been answering questions, not asking them. So it's about making sure you answer all the questions that you know about.
Yeah, I mean, I used to think listening to other podcasts and stuff like that, I know that in America they have a lot of events with sort of shorter, like qualifying ones, and they were big proponents for getting rid of but I always think the reason why in the UK we did care about that was that we used to play longer events, which is 7 rounds, and therefore, you know, if you can't drop your second list in 7 rounds, then something's wrong with your second list, basically. But I have found that in these, now we've started running more local events and the SteamRoller series itself, a lot of shorter events, even though they are sort of that, most of them are DNC zero, that I've found that the two drop it. So do you think it's maybe just a mentality, the approach to the way that we look at our meta in comparison to over there or in other countries? It's maybe they're not taking into account what their possible would be, and therefore that's why they're struggling to see.
Yeah, I think there's probably some truth in that. I think it doesn't, even at a three list, I think going back to the Nationals probably back a year and a half ago now, would be the fact that across a 7 round event, a DNC one isn't a thing. Across a 3 round event, I don't think you can have it. And I'd not actually thought about the difference between those more sort of con based but smaller round specific events. That, yeah, I can see why DNC is more of a problem over there than it is here. You just reminded me one thing about the event at the weekend that was interesting was the 55 minute death clock. It doesn't feel like a huge difference. It's 5 minutes on an hour, but I saw a few games around the hall that were going very, very close. I know James had one that went 2 o'clock.
And, 2 seconds, my friend. I had 2 seconds. It was fine.
Loads of time. And I actually think that the playing at 55-minute death clock is actually a really good way to train yourself just to have that little bit more speed in the way you play. If you can learn to play games in 55 minutes, then when you go to an hour full 60-minute death clock event, you've all of a sudden got 5 minutes extra thinking time to spend whenever you want it, which I fully intend to play most of my games on 55 death clock now, I think, because I think it's a really good way to train yourself.
So it's at Powerfist, we went through a big period where we were playing hardcore rules with 7 minute time turns. You play your game very fast playing on 7 minute time turns.
It's like that extra 5 minutes is kind of for those people out there that were around when time turns was a thing. You used to be able to pick one turn to have a 5 minute extension, which was normally your feet turn. So yeah, I suppose it's like having that extra back. So I mean, that's kind of covered a bit of the meta coverage. Is there anything anyone else wants to raise, any thoughts, any predictions?
The only thing I would say is we talk about not needing DNC at like 7 and 6 round events, but both this year and last year the winners of Blood and Oil, where it's free list DNC zero, both only used one list the whole time through. Like, Matt won it with just Taley Free in 2016, and I think he did it in 2017 as well.
To be fair, I played Old Witch, I think it was 6 of the 7 rounds. I only played Sorcerer 1 once, and I didn't play Strakov at all.
So do you think, I mean, just to put a question into there with, obviously, you know, Matt's a good player, it's an England player. Do you think people were possibly then not considering Matt going and then the Haley three? And when you mentioned before, you know, when you've got people going, the strong players, if you know that there's going to be someone there who's a, you know, an England player, they're going to have Haley three. Do you think any of his rounds people just weren't considering that having a Haley three option? Or do you think that, you know, that possibly it's more just that combination difficult to beat? Or, you know, what are your thoughts there? Is that kind of the crux of it in a way, isn't it? It's kind of thinking you've gone to this national event, you've got this England player who's going to be there with Haley three. Did people possibly consider that, and that's why they ended up, you know, not having a good...
I don't know about you, but I can't build a list that, like, is favoured against it. I can build a list that can deny the cloud wall and have a 50-50 game with it, but then it's still really good. I don't think there's a list in the game that just says, I just beat Haley three. Maybe that's a topic for another discussion, but I don't think it has a solid, this just loses weakness.
Sorry, go on, Mark.
I thought you'd made that list.
Was that at me or at James?
Yeah, sorry, Chris, you, yeah.
Oh, yes. So, yeah, so I'd made that Orion list with the thought that Glenn would be there with Haley 3. And also it was to do with Grimkin with the magic, because it was basically, when I was looking at it, I thought, wow, spell piercers, great. It's got lots of answers. It's got Signar answers. It's got Gremlin Swarm answers. It's got, you know, so many other things that it drops into. So, yes, by theory, I'd never obviously played it before, but I thought by theory this would give me a good drop into that kind of thing. James mentioned there that the trolls may not have a good answer into Haley. So, I mean, the 50-50, I suppose if you get to that point where your experience... I mean, Matt, as you said, he just played that list, and I know he played that list quite... He did play Striker when he was TC, but he's played that list a lot, and he's got a lot of experience with that. So do you think at that point, you know, of someone with that list, someone with that amount of experience, that you have to kind of get that much experience the other way? So if you're not able to play against, you know, someone of that caliber with the Haley 3 a lot, what do you think the plan is there? Just before we're completely off, I'm just looking at this as from the overall meta. That's kind of a good example of someone who's got something that you know is going to be there, you know that he plays that, and, you know, what is it you could do against that?
Personally, I think that generally it's a bad idea to tech for specific lists, because we're at sort of a point with the game where the game is so wide and the kind of lists that you can play are so varied, whatever, that if you tech for a specific thing, you inevitably leave yourself open to something else. So I actually think that going for the 50-50 game is actually generally your best bet, because you can sort of pull out... if you can have a decent game into a list rather than just absolutely getting stomped by it, that's better than going, oh, well, I'm advantaged into this, but I'm going to lose if they drop something else. It helps you avoid list chicken situations.
It's part of the... I absolutely agree with what you're saying. It's part of the reason I play Vyros 2 all the time. I genuinely believe that Vyros 2 has a 40% chance of beating anything. And so, and having that in your pair, assuming equal player skill, and so having that in your pair is really quite reassuring to know that however bad a pair comes up that you don't know what you're doing against, I don't know, it's minion pairs for me more often than not, and just to be able to go, I know this caster really well, and if I play it right and have a decent enough idea what my opponent's doing, I have got a 40% chance of winning this game. It's very comforting.
Mark, did you want to do a Haley 3 tech?
No, I didn't really. All I was going to say is my Veil list is one of the things it's meant to deal with is things like Haley 3, the Cloud Wall with the infantry, the Thrones. You can give them Isle of Sight with the Mist Speaker. You can Wraithbane them to get around that horrible Feats of Turn spell. But all you're doing in that situation when they see that tech is ensuring that then you get Striker 1 instead and bounce off it. So it can be very dangerous if you want to go that way and tech into something, because you can just end up giving yourself something that's not going to answer what you're trying to answer at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I've been explaining to one of our locals, Mark, when we've been talking about stuff that he did have a very list thing. He had, you know, this is my answer to this, and this is my answer. And one of the approaches we've been trying to, between us when we talk about stuff, is to have more of a faction list, which kind of sounds how you were explaining it, how what you're looking at there. So in the case of Orion, when I was playing Glenn had dropped his Nemo list, at that point I go, okay, so I've still got spell pierce, it's not any armor buffs, I can control the lightning, where the electro leaps go, and also all I need to consider, you know, where is electro leaps going to come from and all this kind of thing, and I think I've still got good game into it, and the same with the striker one, if it happens or something like that, I've got rays around that as well. So it was kind of like Orion was my signal drop, therefore I suppose that's the way we've got to kind of think about it as well, is something out there, is that when you're planning your list, if you go from having a, you know, I hate using the percentages because it's such a, yeah, I suppose it's a way to visualize it, but if you've got an 80% win rate against a 3 list, but it really does make you susceptible to the striker one mode threes, you can drop that back to say a 50-50 against Taylor 3, but then you've actually got the tools in there which allow you to play against all of those kind of Signar things that you I think that's definitely a much better choice to these kind of events. Does anyone agree?
Osh.
Okay, well, I mean, we've kind of covered that meta discussion now, so I think hopefully everyone will have now understand what your meta is. Start having a look at your local meta, start having a look at who the people you might have to beat are, keep an eye on the things that, you know, when you get these events, you know, if suddenly Pat Dunford appears and, you know, you're going to be playing against Grimkin, and if Ben goes on tour, there's a good chance you're going to see Virus 2 appearing. It's that kind of thing, just keep an eye on it, and then obviously you can plan. And I imagine, James, you mentioned you're probably going to start looking at Doomy 2, was that?
No, I'm trying to move away from him, but specifically for your meta, it would have been very strong, I feel.
So if you consider your meta, James would have gone to Doomy 2. So, I mean, that's a good example there. It just shows you how you could change what you play based on what you think you're actually to be playing. So what we'll do is keep this one short but sweet. So unless there's anything else that anyone threw out there before we go.
No, just good luck to everyone in whatever qualifiers they're playing in regionally. And it's great to see that this system has taken off really well, and it'll be great to see where it goes for the rest of the year.
Cool. Right, so just before we sign off, this is usually the time that we allow people to do a bit of pimping, so I'll start off. Obviously, keep in touch with everything that's happening on our website, which is www.wmhukiss.uk. We're the same, WMHUKISS on the Twitter, we're on Facebook. Get in touch with me personally, you'll be able to find me, or Rick James White, or Toby Nathan as well. So we'll get in touch with the regional people all on the website. We obviously want this to take off and be even better in the years to come. So the more you give us feedback, the more we'll be able to improve it going forward. Ben, I believe you've got a website that you like to chronicle your smashing of people.
I do, yeah. It's Gear Shields Revenge, named when I was still hopeful that the new Gore Shade 4 was going to be good. It's just basically a battle report blog of the games I play. It tends to get posted to the RET forums and the UK forums when I've posted something significant up there. So keep an eye out for it. Yeah, great.
Okay, and Mark, you're part of the Little Elephants group or something like that?
Yeah, the Merseyside Mammoths, they're playing war games in Southport. They do have a blog, which I keep promising to write for, but not writing for. But there is some very intelligent posts on the blog. It's Merseyside Mammoths WordPress, something like that. I don't know. And there is still 5 spots for the qualifier in Southport on the 3rd of February, which you'll find on the War Games UK website, or there's a Facebook event probably, so it'd be nice if we can fill that up, because I'm currently going, but I might be running it now I've qualified, so that other people can try and qualify, but we'll see about that.
Mark there, and Rob.
Well, if any of you out there have enjoyed my rambling tone of voice, I do write a blog. It's Avatar of Slaughter at .wordpress.com. Also, I update every Friday. And if you fancy coming down to give me a game, I'm always at the Power Fist Gaming Club on a Tuesday. First night's free. I'll see you there.
And also, Rob, you do if you do like the sound of Rob and Richard's sexy voices, you can also hear them on another podcast, which I was previously on.
Yeah, Murder of Crows. We are a bit more sporadic with that one, but it'll generally be up on Facebook when we release a new episode.
So that's if you want any Motherland goodness, which unfortunately I've gone to the snowflake land of Convergence and Grimkin now, so unfortunately you'll have to only be annoyed by my voice here. And then James, you want to wrap it up for us?
Yeah, just a shout out to the Warlords of Warsaw YouTube and Twitch channel. There's currently over 67 games uploaded on the channel, so if you want to start watching some games, we are going to get up streaming again. We took a bit of a break over Christmas, but we should be getting some more live games every Friday night.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for listening to another episode. And if you have any feedback, any questions, please do send either on this link on the Facebook or directly to ourselves. We'll hopefully bring you the information you know you want to hear. So thank you very much, and goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Bye-dee-ho, everyone.
And goodbye from me.